So we just went to Green Bay, where everyone is giddy like Christmas Day. Now let's get some reaction out of Dallas. I can only imagine what it's like on social media down there. I can only imagine what it is like on sports talk radio and all of the things that Saad Youssef of The Athletic has heard over the last 24 hours about the Dallas Cowboys. Saad, Gresh here. How are you? And my God, Jerry actually did it. I can't believe it.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very prevalent reaction, honestly, throughout Dallas-Fort Worth and really a lot of Dallas media as well. We all kind of saw everything that was being said, the trade request, all that stuff. At the end of the day, though, I think we all thought that this deal was going to end up being done. We did not. I don't think anybody expected that Micah Parsons would be traded. Jerry Jones just does not trade his superstar players. There's no precedent for this in the history of the organization. There's a lot of patterns of the opposite, which is him holding on too long to his star players. But I've never seen anything like this from the Jerry Jones Cowboys. This is a first.
Saad, to the best of your knowledge, did Jerry Jones shop Micah Parsons, or is this more like Luka Doncic 2.0, where it was one team really involved and that was it, and it was clandestine for no one else to know?
Well, I think this situation is a little bit in between. I don't think it was one team. I don't think it was just the Green Bay Packers, but it wasn't the entire league. But that really, you know, there's two different situations. With Nico Harrison and the Mavericks, that was complete malpractice. It was just a terrible job on his part. With Jerry Jones, it wasn't so much the shopping around that was his problem. The problem with him was the timing that he tried to do it. If you're trying to do this in March and April, the rest of the league has a lot more cap space before free agency. They have draft picks before the April draft. But when you're trying to do this 1 week before the regular season begins, when teams are already, you know, not only have they spent all their money, they've even cut down their rosters to 53 at this point. When you're trying to do it there, you're automatically shrinking the pool that you have for the options to do this. And so I think it was kind of by default that he didn't have as many options throughout the league. I still don't think it was just the Green Bay Packers. But all of a sudden, you're now looking for a team that not only has the assets to trade for Micah Parsons, but also has the cap space to extend him beyond this year.
So, to the best of your knowledge, Saad, how ugly did it get because Jerry Jones tried to circumvent the agent? It feels like at that point, it was either going to be somebody was going to, you know, cave in and give Micah Parsons what he wanted, or something like this was going to happen. That's the part of this that is really unconscionable to me. I can't believe the NFLPA has not issued a statement on this, but how much did that really drive to this moment of Micah Parsons becoming a Green Bay Packer?
To me, I think it was everything. I think, the Cowboys have the cap space. They have the ability to extend Micah Parsons. That was never the issue. I do think that it came all down to just the egos involved. Jerry has a famous quote. You know, I grew up in Dallas even before I was a reporter for 28 years. And a common quote that I've always heard from Jerry Jones is, don't let your money get mad. And I think Jerry Jones let his money get mad in this situation, because I think, you know, if it wasn't with everything involved with the agent, there weren't that many differences in terms of what Micah Parsons wanted and what the Cowboys wanted, which was to continue the partnership in Dallas. But, you know, the where it really reached fever pitch for me was this past week when Micah Parsons' agent reached out to the Cowboys again and said, all right, let's continue negotiating in earnest. Let's look for a common ground here. And at that point, Jerry Jones basically slammed the door shut on Micah Parsons' extension and said, no, at this point, you're playing on the fifth-year extension. And I think that was the breaking point, and that is when trade talks really began.
Wow, that is that's pretty amazing. So how has the locker room taken this news?
You know, we were in the locker room today, and you know, today was a technically a Monday for the Cowboys since they play a Thursday game, which is not a heavy locker room presence day. We talked to a couple of the rookies. Well, Donovan Ezeraku, one of the rookies, and a second-year player, Marshawn Nealon. They're taking it fine. To me, the way that I interpret Micah's kind of locker room presence, it wasn't so much that I don't think that his departure is going to leave this just gigantic wound that just, you know, permeates throughout the entire locker room. Micah Parsons had a few really close friends in the locker room. And I think for those people, it will hurt quite a bit. I'm talking like guys like Trayvon Diggs in particular. But I don't think that he had this hold on the locker room the way that I think, you know, say a Dak Prescott would. I think that is a completely different territory that the Cowboys don't have to worry about, because that's just the nature of the way Micah's relationship was in the locker room.
What about, I mean, Brian Schottenheimer? My God, like, what a bomb to have dropped on you. I know that he signed up for it, but there is the part of me that still does feel bad for the guy. How does he, I don't know, how do you message this inside the room without saying, well, you know, the crazy old man upstairs is up to his tricks, what am I to do? Like, that's what it feels like he should say. I know he's not going to say that. How in the world does Brian Schottenheimer try to keep this football team moving forward and motivated with what they have?
Yeah, that's a good question. And look, there's not a whole lot that we know yet about Brian Schottenheimer as a head coach. He hasn't made his regular season debut. But I will say the one thing that I do know about him is that he's really good in maintaining relationships. He's really good at communicating with his players and even with the higher-ups in the organization. That's a big reason why he got the job that he did. They really were looking for him to call the offense, but I think when he went in for that interview, he impressed them so much that they gave him the head coaching job. The reason why I say that is because I think that part is really not going to be that difficult for Brian Schottenheimer. He's really good at being upbeat, positive. Up until literally 2 days ago, we sat in a press conference and he said that he had full confidence that Micah Parsons was going to be on the field against the Philadelphia Eagles on Thursday. I think he says all the right things. He knows how to go about it. I think the real challenge is going to be when it comes to scheming and things on the field. That is where it's really going to take a big hit for him and Matt Eberflus, the defensive coordinator. But in terms of, you know, maintaining that stuff in the locker room, out of this entire chaotic situation that's been unfolding in the last 4 months, I think that's the one thing that I have the least concerns about.
Wow, that's very interesting, just in terms of that whole dynamic down there. I'm sure there are going to be times as a head coach he's going to be rolling his eyes with some of the stuff with Jerry Jones. Saad, I want to ask you about the younger fan, right? Someone brought this up to me that if you're like my wife's cousin Chuck, who's 62 years old, you might remember Jerry Jones with Jimmy Johnson a little differently. But if you were born in, say, 2000, all you've seen is, you know, inconsistency and sort of up and down actions from Jerry Jones. Is Jerry Jones running the risk of alienating the young Cowboys fan, especially now that you do the one thing the fans hate, which is trade a superstar?
Yeah, I think absolutely he's running that risk. I'll speak for myself. I'm a 1995 born, and you know, for me, one of my earliest memories of the Cowboys was him handing Chad Hutchinson like a 7-year contract to play quarterback for the Cowboys. So I've never seen the glory days. I've never seen what that's like. And I think right now that's, you know, it's funny because they just dropped this documentary on Netflix about the 90s, the gambler and his Cowboys, Jerry Jones. And I just think the timing is really interesting with all this because, you know, that's focused on the 90s. It talks all about, you know, Jerry in the glory days. And a big topic in that documentary was the Herschel Walker trade. And when I look at the way that Jerry's been operating this summer, I feel a lot of it has been operating on nostalgia, trying to rekindle that 90s, except that I think the NFL has kind of passed it by at this point. there's a salary cap, the other teams are a lot more able to keep pace. And Jerry is not able to be a front runner the way that he was in the 90s. And I think that's really, kind of a conflict here for Jerry, because you're right. I do think that he is alienating a lot of those younger fans. And I don't think that, you have to be as young as 2000. Like I said, if you're even in the 90s, this drought has been going on for 30 years. It has been a long time since the Cowboys have even been in an NFC championship game. So, yeah, they are running that risk. But on the other hand, while we say all of that, yesterday, or I think it was 2 days ago, Forbes releases a report where the Cowboys are still the most valuable franchise in the world, and they're a distant first place in that. And I think for Jerry Jones, that's his Super Bowl. I think that is what matters most. And as long as that number keeps going up, as it does, I don't think too much else is going to change.
Saad, is there anything good about this that you can sell us on? Like, I know that Jerry Jones is going to put perfume on the pig, but is there any silver lining, any one pot? Like, is there anything good that comes out of this, in your opinion?
Sure. I mean, I don't think trading Micah Parsons is like the craziest thing ever. I really don't, to be honest with you. A lot of people comparing this to like the Luka Doncic trade, and I don't even think they're in the same galaxy. I mean, trading Luka Doncic it was an inexcusable thing that the Mavericks did. I understand wanting to trade Micah Parsons. Now, the process of how we got there is what is the big issue. Like I said, the timing of it, the smearing the agent in public when that's the same agent that represents George Pickens, who you're going to try to extend next year in the offseason. There's a lot that they mishandled in the process of this. But yeah, I don't think trading Micah Parsons is necessarily the end of the world. The Cowboys, they weren't one superstar pass rusher away from being a Super Bowl contender. I mean, before Micah Parsons was traded, we all thought he was gonna stay in Dallas, and we were all still picking them to win 8 or 9 games this season. So it's not like it's the end of the world. So I think that's one silver lining that you take from it. The other thing is, how are they going to manage these first round picks? Now, Green Bay is most likely going to be successful, and these are going to be bottom of the first round picks. But hell, the Cowboys might be in the first half of the first round. And do they package those to, move up in the draft? Do they get players that can make an instant impact in the Dak Prescott window? I think those are all the kind of, questions that you're going to be looking at. And to be honest with you, their deepest position in training camp this year probably was defensive end. So losing Micah Parsons is not a death blow to them necessarily, but that's because this wasn't something their whole hopes weren't riding on Micah being there. They weren't very good of a football team, even with Micah in the fold. They got run off the field by Micah's now Packers in 2023 when they were a top seed, a second seed in the NFC. So the Cowboys haven't been close to a Super Bowl, and losing Micah Parsons doesn't make them any closer, but it doesn't necessarily take them out of where they were already, which was a solid playoff team.
All right, well, hopefully everything calms down now down there in Dallas, and the wacky trades stop and things like that. Saad Youssef of The Athletic breaking it all down from Dallas in the belly of the beast. Saad, thank you for the time. Great conversation. Appreciate the intel. Have a good season.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
There we go. I mean, to hear, it isn't the craziest thing in the world to trade Micah Parsons, but I think Saad does make a good point. And I'd sort of brought it up earlier that if you do this around the draft, it's almost like a lottery in a way. And you're probably going to get more compensation out of it than what Jerry Jones was able to do. But, I admittedly, I was kind of going down the road of, is this similar to trading Luka? And what would sting more? Excuse me, what would sting more? And Saad kind of shut me down pretty quick, and it was like, no, the Luka thing is way worse. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Rashawn is in Baltimore on the Micah Parsons trade. Rashawn, you're with Gresh on the Infinity Sports Network.
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me. And me being a Cowboys fan, I look at this a different way. I'm not really a fan of Parsons. I guess some of it is personal because I met him before and he wasn't a nice person. So I've been holding on to that. But also, he disappears in big games, man. Like, let's be honest. One sack in four playoff games. The guy seems, you know, he's turned out, seemed like he was like a crybaby towards the end. And also, looking at this salary cap situation and the contracts the Cowboys already dished out, you know, you got a total combined $380 million guaranteed between Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, and Trayvon Diggs. So if we would have gave him $130 million, that's a half a billion dollars in guaranteed money for four players. And guess what? I didn't have the Cowboys making the playoffs this year with or without Michael Parsons. So might as well trade him, get the draft picks, and get other pieces around you.
Yeah, why not? You know? Why not just trade CeeDee Lamb then too? Why not turn around and trade other and Rashawn Thanks? Why not trade other guys on the roster then? So if it's down to choice, we're just going with the guys that are already under contract that we're kind of stuck with. Like, that's the part that gets me. Now, look, Micah in the playoffs, you know, in the last playoff game in 2023, I can understand the quibble. But if you look in 2022, even though it was two games, guys still had three quarterback hits, two tackles for loss, seven tackles overall, and a sack. And in 2021, they played one game as a 22-year-old and went and had a tackle for loss and nine combined tackles. So I don't think he disappears. I think the problem is he is dragged down by the Cowboys, who can't win nothing in the postseason anyway. Here's the challenge I give you next. Dak, Micah Parsons, CeeDee Lamb, those are your big paid guys. If you could only pick one, who would you pick? Would you pick Dak over Micah? I mean, would you really do that? You can only have one of Dak, Micah Parsons, or CeeDee Lamb. Who is the guy that you're picking? Don't worry about the cap. I'm just talking about player for player for player. If you were keeping one, who would be the one you would keep? At 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. Gresh in for JR on the Infinity Sports Network.
You're listening to the JR Sport Brief. Here's Gresh.
Drunk driving changes your world. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA. The 2025 Black College Hall of Fame Classic takes place over Labor Day weekend, August 28th through 31st in Canton, Ohio. The game that everyone will come to see is on Sunday, August 31st at Tom Benson Hall of Fame Stadium. This year's clash at the Classic features two Division II conference champions, the Virginia Union Panthers out of the CIAA and the Miles College Golden Bears out of the SIAC. Both had dominant seasons last year. Game will be simulcast on HBCU Go and NFL Network. Now, that's going to mark a historic moment for HBCU football. Beyond the Gridiron, the weekend celebrates HBCU excellence with events like a college fair, Battle of the Bands, community tailgate, and a fifth quarter band showdown. The Classic blends high-level football with culture, education, and tradition, making it one of the most anticipated events in the HBCU sports calendar. When I was at Rhode Island, we played one HBCU team. We went to Delaware State. That was the first time I got to see Dover Raceway, the racetrack. So where you and I wouldn't even call it a stadium back then at Delaware State. I don't know what they have now. But I know that they were across from, like, the big racetrack. When you're standing on the field, you can kind of see it. And, yeah, it was an interesting it was an interesting place to go play a football game. And learned a little bit about the presentation at HBCU games, which the band was awesome. And basically we were kind of huddled in a outdoor corner of the end zone because the facilities there, and not that the Rhode Island facilities were great, but they weren't great at Del State. I don't know what they are now. I know Deshaun Jackson, I do believe, just took over, that program. But, HBCU football has been getting, some run. You know, you start putting players in the NFL and people start to respect your league a little bit, so good for those HBCU schools. Fantastic halftimes, I got to say. Fantastic halftimes, and you never know when somebody's going to make the pros and represent one of those HBCU schools. I know in our conversation with Saad down in Dallas, Saad Youssef, who joined us at The Athletic, he had mentioned the kind of the betting lines after the Micah Parsons trade. So to show you from a gambling and handicapping standpoint, the value of Micah Parsons in that world, at MGM Sportsbook, Green Bay moved from 22-1 to win the Super Bowl, which was 10th on the board, to 13-1 to win the Super Bowl, which is sixth best on the board. So they took away the value pretty quickly in terms of betting Green Bay to win the Super Bowl. Now, as you can imagine, and as someone who's been telling everybody, bet the Cowboys to not make the playoffs. That was a minus 210 wager about 2 weeks ago. Dallas went from 50-1 to 60-1, and they're now tied with the Seattle Seahawks. That represents Dallas's worst preseason Super Bowl odds since 2014, when the Cowboys were 75-1 that year going into the season. The guy who is the vice president of risk at the Westgate Las Vegas Superbook said, "We moved Green Bay from 20-1 to 12-1 to win the Super Bowl. The Packers need to get a passing game, but long term, they should be better than Detroit." Now, what about week one, you ask? Green Bay moved from a 1.5-point home favorite against the Lions to 2.5. So Micah Parsons moved the line for this week's game 1 point. And the Cowboys went from a consensus, which means all the sports books kind of agree, consensus 7-point underdogs at Philly to 7.5-point dogs, although you could probably still find some sevens out there. And now knowing that Micah Parsons isn't showing up, Philly minus the number all day long. In fact, I would say Philly minus the number in the first half. A guy quoted in here, Lamar Mitchell, director of trading at MGM Resorts, said, "Think the Packers are definitely in play for the championship. If Jordan Love stays upright and healthy, they should be in the mix to win the Super Bowl." Green Bay's win total moved from 9.5 to 10.5. The under is weighted now to minus 130. And Dallas has shifted from 7.5 to 6.5. And the over on Dallas at 6.5 is weighted to minus 150. So that means you're betting 150 on that bet to win $100, in case you don't know. The over-under is the Cowboys' lowest win total since 2002. Now, Green Bay also moved into the position of NFC North favorites at sportsbooks ahead of the Lions. Green Bay moved to plus 170 to win the North at BetMGM, and Detroit moved to plus 200. So I think, you know, that's a pretty big indicator as to some expectations, but also just how important Micah Parsons is going to be to the Green Bay Packers. Now, Green Bay is now tied with Detroit for the second best odds to win the NFC at plus 650. The Eagles have the skinniest odds at, or sorry, Green Bay and Detroit are plus 650. Philadelphia is plus 350. The Cowboys' new win total of just 6.5, the lowest since 02, but expectations already weren't high in the betting market for Dallas. So while Dallas's number moved, I don't know if it necessarily led to either more dollars coming in or, you know, more people betting on the negative like me when it comes to Dallas, the whole missing the playoffs. One better at BetMGM wagered $10,000 on the Cowboys at 25-1 before the Parsons trade. Cowboys are now 30-1 to win the conference. Boy, if you're that guy, I don't think you're dipping back in. The Week 4 look-ahead line to Dallas and Green Bay. Green Bay is a 2.5-point road favorite at sportsbooks on the look-ahead line. And I would say after a couple weeks, that may end up changing. I could see that line end up moving a little bit more. 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476. A lot of NFL. We touched on college football. I am going to look ahead to Week 1. I really thought Jerry Jones was going to try to ruin opening night a different kind of way. Now that we know he's not going to do it, I'm really, really confident on the Eagles now smacking around the Cowboys with no Micah Parsons. But we will get to all that coming up next with you on these phones. I'm Gresh in for JR. Let's get updated on everything in the world of sports. Here is Pete McCarthy or Marco Belletti.
You're listening to the JR Sport Brief. Here's Gresh.
All right, so Ryan, I know what's going on here. You're in cahoots with the Gelb people. I got a text about 2:45 of, wait, 5:45 Eastern time, right around there. Somebody said, hey, Gelb and crew, we're looking for you. But I was downstairs making myself, getting myself a glass of water and getting ready for the show. So I know at the end of Gelb's show, he was going to try to poke and prod me because of this horse shack of a song that this guy plays. He can't come up with some other song that has alliteration for Zach, for God's sakes. And he plays this awful 90s boy band garbage. Has anybody ever met Gelb? Like, I am 6'5" and north of 300, right? Gelb is like probably 6'4", 6'5", right around my height, except thinner. He is the last guy who would be in a boy band dancing up there with a bunch of people who may or may not have met Lou Pearlman along the way. And if you don't get that joke, Gelb, then you shouldn't be playing this. And Ryan, you're now, you like Jericho, you've made the list. Because I know little Samter and those tiny little hands of his are probably sitting in the chair rubbing them together, laughing because they know I'm completely spazzing out over this. And they wanted to poke the bear earlier, and they were lucky I wasn't sitting here. Because I'd have dog cussed both their asses. Gelb, get out of here with that crap. Will you please? And congratulations on the compass thing. Ryan, are you under orders to clip it and send it to them?
I'll plead the fifth.
Okay, that's what I thought. That's what I thought. You know what? The next time Gelb comes to a game, I'm going to make sure that or goes to a Patriots game since he's a Patriots fan. I'll make sure to find him or text him and, like, wave to him from the red seats while I go in to go get some free food at halftime.
That's too nice. I would be more.
No. I would not offer him a ticket. I'm saying I would wave to him wherever he is, and then I would go inside, and he would sit there, you know, with everybody else on the outside in a cold day in November in New England.
Oh, that's good, though. You have to shove it in his face in a respectful way. Like, I don't know, get like a, what's fancy food? Like clam chowder they have in New England Stadium?
Well, a little bit. See, here's the thing. In the my father-in-law's company is the one that has the tickets in the red seats. And normally the way I would describe it is you're paying to park closer. And you get your own awesome parking lot if you're in the red seats at Gillette. But it used to be you paid to be able to go inside to pay to buy fancier food, right? So there would be, at certain times of year, there'd be lobster rolls. You're right, there'd be the clam chowder. They do make really good pizza there. But what happened was Gerard Mayo taking over for Bill Belichick sucked so bad. It was so terrible that in the final couple games of the year, the people in the red seats who are used to paying for access to their own sort of concession stands to go buy stuff at, they were giving it away for free. So if I went to one of the last games of the year. I don't make it a consistent thing for me to like go to these games whenever my wife has the tickets through my father-in-law and his company. So I went to one last year, and Ryan, how about this? I go up to the thing and I'm like, is this really free? And they're like, yeah. And they told me all. So it's like, all right, you know, I got a couple of hot dogs and like a slice of pizza and stuff like that. And you think you got to get your phone ready or you get your credit card out. Even though I was like, I wasn't stoned or anything, but I walked up there and I was like, yo, is this free? And they were like, yeah. And I still had the urge to like get my wallet out and still pay for it because that's normally a part of the experience there. But no, now you can be a tub. if you want to go to town on their hot dogs, you can go up there and be like, hey, yo, give me five dogs. They give them to you and be like, here you go. And that's it. So they already, at least in the red seats in New England, they're already committed to, you know, giving people the free stuff on the basics because it started to stink last year. I'll tell you the other thing, too. Whenever you're getting those club seats, I always do concession stand because I'm not the biggest drinker, but what you really are doing is kind of paying up for better parking, a good seat, and access to a bar that, quite honestly, if you don't even want to go sit in the stands, like there have been times where we've gone to the games where maybe like me and my boys might go sit in the stands and there's normally a seat open because my wife is just like, I'd rather hang at the bar here with my friends and just watch the game that way. So there is that part of it too, because I'm not a drinker. It's not that I'm not a drinker. I'll drink around my wife. I drink around people I'm comfortable around. Otherwise, I'm not doing it because, you know, I don't want to have like too much gin or do something stupid or say something or goozle somebody. Nah, I'm better with other stuff. If you catch my drift for people who, you know, certain things have been legalized in the Northeast. But I know that bar is always packed every time you're there. So, you know, they're making their money on liquor. To give somebody what turns into, with labor, probably a 20-cent hot dog when it's all said and done, it ain't that big a deal, but it was the gesture. So anyway, my gesture would be to be in the red seats, find out what next time Gelb's there, and if I'm there, either way, like wave to him from my red seat as if I'm texting him, and then maybe like flip him off or something like that, and then turn around and go in and get my appropriate amount of food. So anyway, man, that was terrible. What a way to bring the show down at the end, to play that stupid boy band crap from the Gelb show. Well, let's get into previewing the week that is coming up in the National Football League. So on Thursday, boy, I'll tell you, I'd have spent hard-earned money talking into a microphone on a wager that Jerry Jones was going to sign Micah Parsons to a long-term contract extension on the morning of the game in Philadelphia, where Philly is getting ready to raise a banner in Lincoln Financial Field. I absolutely 100% would have taken that bet hook, line, and sinker, and I would have lost. But Dallas is now going into Philadelphia. Philly is a 7.5-point favorite. I hope he got it at 6.5 or 7. I'm sure there's still some sevens out there if you want to find it, but I have no hope for Dallas now. And even if it falls on Dak Prescott, that guy, he'll throw 3 touchdowns, but he'll throw a big interception in the, you know, fourth quarter. Then he'll end up sealing it for Philadelphia, in my opinion. Here's a game from a gambling standpoint I want nothing to do with. Kansas City at Los Angeles. It's just too much weird stuff when you go that far away. They're going to Brazil to play a game. Who knows if somebody wakes up with, like, the sniffles, malaria, the trots, whatever. Too much weirdness can happen on that Friday night game all the way down in Brazil. So, yeah, I'm just staying away from Kansas City and the Chargers. Now, the Kansas City will find a way to win the game late. I think it's Kansas City minus 3.5. Yeah, I think that's a 3-point win for Kansas City. If you feel the need to have action on it, that's just my gut feel. Tampa is at Atlanta. I really wonder if Arthur Blank of the Atlanta Falcons, at some point during this regular season, in a moment by himself, maybe on his yacht where he met with this guy, that if it isn't going well in Atlanta, I really do wonder if Arthur Blank is sitting there saying, damn, I should have went with Bill Belichick. Because I just don't see Atlanta surging to the playoffs this year. Tampa's got a groove. They got a quarterback. They got a vibe. I think Baker Mayfield's pretty comfortable there. I'm going with Tampa in that one. Cincinnati and Cleveland. Cleveland, same thing as Dallas. You got no chance. Miami and Indianapolis. Oh, my God. This is the suck bag bowl. Miami loses to a thermometer twice a year, ladies and gentlemen. If it's 32 and below, the Dolphins are losing that game. And then Indianapolis is going with Danny Dimes, for God's sakes. The epitome of mediocrity will be in Lucas Oil Stadium at 1 o'clock. Then you have Las Vegas and New England, where both cities have some renewed hope. They got responsible adult head coaches in there, not the two guys that were there last year on each side. Now you got Vrabel and you got Pete Carroll. And I think in New England, they're still trying to figure out the back end of their secondary, but their front seven's ready to turn it loose. And we'll see if Christian Gonzalez gets out there for New England. Boy, if he does, that makes a big difference. At least you know you got a number one corner, even if you're not really feeling the rest of the back end of your secondary. But I think it's going to be tough for Vegas to run right into the front seven of that New England defense. Arizona's at New Orleans. I mean, this is a race to Arch Manning, isn't it? Which of these teams can just stink worse? And I think New Orleans is up to the task. Pittsburgh at New York Jets. why would I believe the New York Jets have fixed anything in their organization? I'm going Pittsburgh. Then you got the New York Giants at Washington. I feel like Washington calmed their situation down by bringing back Terry McLaurin. Very much necessary there. Carolina is at Jacksonville. Jacksonville's a favorite in this game. I can't wait to watch it on Fox. I hope it is on in my neck of the woods, or I got to find a way because I want to watch Travis Hunter and all the different ways they use that guy on offense and defense. Number one overall picks normally lose that opener. Tennessee is at Denver. Do with that what you wish. San Francisco, are they kind of healthy? Are they grumpy? Are people ticked off? San Fran is at Seattle. I have no faith in Seattle. I think last year was a Cinderella season for Sam Darnold. I don't think he's that good. Detroit is at Green Bay. Boy, has the tenor and tone of that game changed at 4:25 on Sunday. And then you got Houston at L.A., the L.A. Rams, where, oh, my God, it's the smartest guy in the world, Sean McVay. How can L.A. lose? And then on Sunday Night Football, a heavyweight fight that might determine the number one seed, Baltimore is at Buffalo, and then Monday night, Minnesota at Chicago. Both young quarterbacks, I think, will struggle. Great job by Ryan Betcher down in New York City. I will see you on Sunday at 10 a.m. right here on the Infinity Sports Network.